Hello. Welcome. This is Elliot Reed with two more new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. As I mentioned earlier in this series of Sherlock Holmes cassettes, there were no child labor laws during the Victorian era. Though many children were forced to work ungodly hours, there were a number of children who, by hook or crook, lived and survived in the streets of London. Some of these children became the Baker Street Irregulars, a small group of young boys who were enlisted by Sherlock Holmes to do the work that he could not possibly do himself. In the Sherlock Holmes novel, A Study in Scarlet, Dr. Watson writes of his friend Holmes, and I quote, "It's the Baker Street Division of the Detective Police Force," said my companion gravely, and as he spoke, there rushed into the room half a dozen of the dirtiest and most ragged street urchins that ever I clapped eyes on. There's more work to be got out of one of those little beggars than out of a dozen of the force. The mere sight of an official-looking person seals men's lips. These youngsters, however, go everywhere and hear everything, Holmes commented. Because they were children, most adults ignored the irregulars as they went about their business. This gave them free run of London, enabling them to follow suspects unobtrusively. In The Sign of Four, Holmes told the irregulars he had to know the whereabouts of the ship Aurora. In only a short while, the irregulars had spread out along the waterfront docks and quickly found its whereabouts. It would have taken Holmes many precious hours to accomplish the same thing. Precious hours he needed to move forward in other areas of the case. The Baker Street Irregulars are mentioned in three of the original Conan Doyle works, A Study in Scarlet, Sign of Four, and The Crooked Man. When Basil Rathbone left the series and Tom Conway took over as Holmes, Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher were retained as the writers of the series. And both men were well aware they could use the Baker Street Irregulars to enhance some of the Holmes radio broadcast mysteries. And that is exactly what they did in various episodes of the series. What was good for Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was good for the radio broadcasts. But Green and Boucher took care not to overuse the Baker Street Irregulars, employing them only where they'd be most effective. Boucher was so enamored of Sherlock Holmes and the Baker Street Irregulars, he actually wrote a mystery novel that takes place in 1939 and has as its title The Case of the Baker Street Irregulars. Quite an honor given to that band of ragamuffins. Now, let's see how Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher serve up the strange case of the persecuted millionaire.
Premo Hair Tonic and Premo Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Well, once again, it's time to keep that weekly date with our old friend and genial host, Dr. Watson. I'm sure he's expecting us, so let's join him, shall we? Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. As you can see, I'm quite ready for you. The crackling fire in the grate, some port in the decanter over there, and although I smoke a pipe myself, I think you'll find those cigars rather special.
All the fixings for a session of storytelling, eh, Dr. Watson? Well, which particular Sherlock Holmes adventure have you selected for tonight?
The story that I call The Strange Case of the Persecuted Millionaire.
It sounds promising.
In some respects, my boy, I think it's one of the oddest adventures we ever had. There's a case in which Sherlock Holmes narrowly prevented a shocking tragedy, and yet, at the conclusion of the affair, he appeared in a most unusual role. The role of a rather lean and elderly Cupid.
This I've got to hear. But before you begin, Dr. Watson, do you mind if I...
Have a word with our listeners? Of course not, Mr. Bell, of course not.
Men, Neat-looking, well-groomed hair does so much to give a man that air of success, to say nothing of adding to his good looks. I'm sure you'll be interested in hearing more about this modern trend in hair grooming, which has become such a nationwide favorite. It's called Cremel Hair Tonic. This highly specialized hair tonic contains a combination of hair grooming ingredients which is found in no other hair tonic. Yes, that's exactly why Cremel gives a man's hair such a natural, well-groomed look and keeps it in place longer. Keeps every lock in perfect order from morning till night. Yet Cremel never gives hair that cheap, greasy, patent leather look. Cremel keeps hair looking mighty handsome with a rich, healthy-looking luster. Yet it always feels and looks so clean on your hair and scalp. Men, if you aren't already using a hair tonic, try Cremel. If you're using some other hair dressing, change to Cremel. Just see if your hair doesn't look much better than it ever did before. Better groomed, better looking. K-R-E-M-L, Cremel Hair Tonic. Now, Dr. Watson, I want to hear about the strange case of the persecuted millionaire.
Well, Mr. Bell, that adventure began in Baker Street on a gray November day at the turn of the century. Sherlock Holmes and I had just finished our lunch, I remember, and were sitting each side of a blazing fire, just like you and I are tonight. The great man, his feet thrust out before him, was lying back in his chair, his long, thin hands locked behind his head, and a curved pipe jutting out the corner of his mouth was emitting great clouds of gray-blue smoke. After a few moments, I noticed that he was gazing at my boots with very marked attention.
But why Turkish, Watson?
The boots are English. I got them at Latimer's in Oxford Street.
Not the boots, the bath. Why the relaxing and expensive Turkish bath rather than the invigorating homemade article?
Well, because for the last few days I've been having some nasty twinges of rheumatism. By the way, I'm sure the connection between my boots and a Turkish bath is perfectly obvious to you, Holmes, but I'm completely mystified.
You're in the habit of doing up your boots in a certain way. I observe that on this occasion they're tied in a double bow. You have, therefore, had them off. Who has retied them? A bootmaker? Or the boy at the Turkish bath? But your boots are nearly new. Then what remains? The bath. Absurdly simple, isn't it?
When you explain it.
Come in. Yes, Mrs. Hudson?
It's a note for you, Mr. Holmes. A messenger boy just brought it.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Who's it from, Holmes?
I swear that only reigning royalty can be as presumptuous as an American businessman. Read it for yourself.
I shall be at your lodgings at 2 tomorrow. Be there. And it's signed John V. Harden. Be there. Sounds an extremely arrogant fellow. What makes you think that he's an American?
The use of the initial for the middle name is peculiar to that country.
Oh. By Jove, it's nearly 2 o'clock now, Holmes.
Yes. Let's see what we can find out about the gentleman. Where's that Cyclopedia of American Biography? Ah, here it is. H.H.A. Hanley, Hanson, Harden. Here's our man, Watson. John Vincent Harden.
What does it say about him?
Born in Chicago, 45 years old, unmarried. Chiefly noted for his tremendous tobacco interests and his addiction to fishing.
It's an odd combination.
And this is odder. He made his professional debut as a violinist 30 years ago. A millionaire musician.
Ah, that must be him now. Yes, there's a most impressive brougham and pair outside.
Then, since my client is a violinist, I think I'll welcome him appropriately. Hand me my instrument, will you, old chap?
Holmes. Funny way to start a business interview, I must say.
Mr. Harden sounds like an aggressive man. And music hath charms to soothe.
Mr. Harden to see you, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Come in, Mr. Harden. I'm Sherlock Holmes, and this is my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do? If we're to do business, Mr. Holmes, for heaven's sake, put that violin away. I heard you scraping away as I came up the stairs.
So you don't care for my friend's playing, sir?
I don't care for anyone's playing. I loathe the fiddle.
Curious. I was under the impression...
Listen, Mr. Holmes, I haven't come here to discuss your musical impressions. I've come here to talk about my personal safety and my sanity.
Then pray talk about it, Mr. Harden.
I'm being persecuted. Somebody's trying to drive me crazy.
Oh, really? Just what form does this persecution take, Mr. Harden?
Well, it began about a month ago. My horse ran away in Rotten Row and threw me. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe not. I've heard of burrs under saddles. And then, last night...
Something else happened?
Someone destroyed Methuselah.
Methuselah? An old retainer of yours, Mr. Harden? Or a pet?
No. Methuselah was the finest, largest, oldest tarpon ever caught.
A stuffed fish? You asked Sherlock Holmes?
Quiet, Watson. I'm sure that a great deal more lies behind this. Please continue, Mr. Harden.
Everything was going fine, Mr. Holmes, until these persecutions started. Early this year, I bought a fine old house in Cavendish Place. I'm engaged to be married to Alicia Edwards, the Honorable Alicia Edwards. She's Lord Brentwood's daughter. My life was perfect until I began to get these notes.
What sort of notes, Mr. Harden?
They kept turning up in odd places. My coat pockets, under my pillows at night. I found them on the upholstery of my carriage.
You brought these notes with you?
Of course.
All in the same handwriting. And all the messages seem to have the same theme.
Well, what do they say, Holmes?
The first one says, you thought he had no one to avenge him, didn't you? And this one says, you murdered him, you will pay for it. And this is curious. It will have blood. They say blood will have blood. That quotation is from Macbeth.
Oh, then that means the note was written by an Englishman.
Not necessarily, Watson. It's possible that they've heard of Shakespeare in America, you know.
Oh, yes, I suppose it might have.
Mr. Harden, all these messages threaten your death. Can you think of anyone who might wish to kill you?
No, I can't. I've never hurt anyone, much less killed a person. The notes don't make any sense.
Do you recognize the handwriting?
I've never seen it before in my life.
You mentioned that your prize tarpon was mutilated. What members of your household might have had the opportunity of performing that act of vandalism?
Three people. My secretary, Margaret Bates, Stephen, my brother, and my fiancée. They were all at the house last night.
There seems to be a clear pattern to this case, Mr. Harden. I suggest that you return to your home and obtain for me samples of the handwriting of the three people you've mentioned. When I've examined those, I shall be in a better position to advise you in this matter.
Holmes, you've spent 3 hours with a magnifying glass and those samples of handwriting that Mr. Harden brought back. Have you found the clue?
Nothing positive, Watson. It's quite curious. The handwriting of the threatening note seems to be that of a male with an American education.
Oh, why do you say that?
Observe this note.
Who dies unavenged can never sleep with honor.
You'll notice that honor is spelt without a U. That's the American way.
Then that means that his fiancée didn't write him.
She might have deliberately spelt it that way to remove suspicion from herself. No, I'm afraid these samples prove nothing.
Then we're no nearer finding out who's responsible.
Well, at least we've ruled out an obvious possibility. Come in. Yes, Mr. Hudson.
It's a telegram, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Better get your coat and hat, Watson.
It's from Mr. Harden?
Yes. He says, a worse blow has fallen. Come at once.
I'm Margaret Bates, Mr. Harden's secretary.
How do you do?
How do you do? What happened, Miss Bates? We left as soon as we received his wire.
I don't know what happened, Mr. Holmes, but I'm terribly worried. He rushed out here, dictated that telegram, and then went back and locked himself in the study. He says he'll see no one but you.
Hello, Margaret.
Oh, Stephen, you startled me.
What's the matter? Do you think I was listening at the keyhole?
Oh.
Introduce me to our visitors, won't you?
This is Stephen, Mr. Harden's brother. Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Sherlock Holmes and his friend, huh? I've heard about you. Don't tell me Brother John has fallen foul of the law.
No, sir. He needs its protection, I fear.
Don't be too sure. I'm thinking of taking him to court myself on a charge of woman stealing.
Your brother a kidnapper? Great Scott.
No, no, Dr. Watson. It's perfectly legal. It's just that I saw Alicia Edwards first, but then, of course, I don't control the Harden millions.
Let's go to the study, shall we, Mr. Holmes?
An excellent idea. Perhaps we'll see you later, sir.
Perhaps. And don't take John too seriously.
Oh, he's hateful. Always making fun of John, his brother. And yet Stephen's never done a day's work in his life. This is the door to the study.
Hoyt!
Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson are here.
Good, good.
Come in. Thank you, Margaret.
I'll see you gentlemen later.
What form did the new attack take, Mr. Harden?
This time it's theft. My safe was rifled last night.
What was stolen, sir?
An extremely valuable document. It was the key to my agreement with the British Tobacco Trust. The loss of the paper represented $1 million to me. But that isn't what upsets me most. Money I can afford to lose, but my sanity is more valuable. In the safe, I found another note, Holmes.
May I see it, please?
Here.
The coffin is made, the funeral parlor is ready, the time is ripe. The croaking raven doth bellow for revenge.
Lord, what a frightening message.
And once again observe the odd combination of Shakespeare and American idiom. Funeral parlor is what we refer to as an undertaker's, and the croaking raven comes from Hamlet.
Holmes, I'm not a weak man, but I'm frightened. You've got to protect me.
I shall do my best, Mr. Harden. Who was here last night?
My secretary, Margaret Bates, my fiancée. She went back to London this morning.
I met your brother, Stephen, just now. I noticed that he was carrying a valise. Was he leaving the house or returning to it?
Returning. He went out of town last night.
Well, then that rules him out.
Not until we investigate his alibi, Watson. Mr. Harden, I'm a constant and thorough reader of the Times. The engagement of a peer's daughter to a prominent American would be striking news. And yet I've read nothing about it.
We're announcing it formally tomorrow. I'm giving a party at Claridge's to celebrate the event.
Then I think it would be a wise precaution if Dr. Watson and I attended that party.
I was about to suggest the same thing, Holmes. I need to have men about me I can trust. I think this is a deliberate plot to drive me mad. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I want you to meet my fiancée, Miss Alicia Edwards. Alicia, my dear.
Yes, John.
I want to introduce Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
How do you do? May I congratulate you on your engagement?
Yes, indeed. A union between the old world and the new is an encouraging sign of the times.
I wish you could convince Papa of that, Mr. Holmes. Whenever he meets John, he always behaves as if he expected him to be wearing feathers and carrying a scalping knife.
Feathers and a knife. That's very funny.
I don't find it so.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
Excuse me. I want to talk to the officer.
Dear me. Now I've upset John again. He's ridiculously sensitive. Americans are really rather touchy.
And yet you're going to marry one?
Papa's estates have eaten up a lot of money. And that's the commodity with which John seems well endowed. I think you understand me, Mr. Holmes.
I'm sure I do. Personally, I may say that I'm always glad to meet an American. I'm one of those who believes that the folly of a monarch and the blundering of a minister in far-gone years should not now stand between two nations.
Mr. Holmes, I find you pompous and dull. Goodbye.
Upon my soul, what an unpleasant, heartless young woman. She's obviously marrying Harden for his money.
Obviously. Though I don't think she has an aversion to all Americans.
Oh? Why do you say that?
She has been dancing with Mr. Harden's brother, Stephen, most of the evening. At this moment, he joined her at the door, and they're leaving together.
Scott, you think that she...
I don't understand that.
Hello? What's happening up there on the orchestra?
John Harden is arguing with one of the violinists.
The musician. I won't take any more of it.
Look, look. He snatched the instrument out of his hand.
Come on, get out of here. You're not fit to fiddle in an Irish wake. Out with you. The rest of you, go on, play.
Holmes, he's behaving like a madman. He's rushing after the musician and brandishing the violin as if he's going to brain him with it.
Yes, Watson. That quarrel with the violinist was not a totally sane act. If the anonymous correspondent's motive is to undermine Harden's reason, he may be succeeding.
But who has a motive? Might be the brother, Stephen. He's obviously jealous of the girl. And he probably is next in line for the Harden million.
But I checked his alibi for last night. He was out of town.
Stop the music! Stop playing!
What the devil's wrong now?
Holmes, where are you?
Here I am, Mr. Harden.
Well, come with me at once.
What's wrong, sir?
It's Alicia. I found her in the corridor. She's been strangled.
just a moment, we'll find out what happens next in the strange case of the persecuted millionaire. Hair specialists constantly advise us to take better care of the hair we've got. And men, don't forget that if you want your hair handsome and healthy looking, one of the first requirements is a hygienic scalp. So why settle for just any hairdressing when you can enjoy the extra advantages of this highly specialized Cremel hair tonic? Cremel contains a unique combination of hair grooming ingredients which is found in no other hair preparation. It keeps hair attractively groomed at all times, looking so neat and orderly. But Cremel does lots more than keep hair looking handsome. A Cremel massage stimulates circulation right in the surface of your scalp and leaves your scalp feeling so alive and invigorated, as fresh as a daisy. At the same time, Cremel removes dandruff flakes. It's excellent to lubricate a dry scalp. And if your hair is so dry that it breaks and falls when you comb it, Cremel actually helps condition the hair in that it makes it feel softer, more pliable. So men, take better care of the hair you've got. Buy a bottle of Cremel at any drug counter. Ask for an application at your barber shop. Use Cremel daily for better groomed hair, for a more hygienic scalp. K-R-E-M-L, Cremel Hair Tonic. Well, Dr. Watson, so the Honorable Alicia Edwards had been strangled at her engagement party. What happened next?
Well, I applied first aid, Mr. Bell, and found the girl was not dead. We rushed her to the hospital, and a few hours later, we were able to talk to her, but we found that she could give us no clue. When we left the room, Harden was waiting for us in the corridor.
How is she? Is she going to be all right?
Well, don't worry, Mr. Harden. She'll be all right, but she had a very narrow escape.
But why attack her? Why not me?
The pattern becomes increasingly clear, Mr. Harden. Your enemy has struck at your fishing, your business, and now at your fiancé. So every blow is at your wealth and position.
And my sanity. Mr. Holmes, you've got to find out who's behind all this.
On the occasion of the mutilation of the fish, three people had the opportunity. Your brother, Stephen, is clear on the second attack, and on this last one, I think we may reasonably assume that your fiancée did not strangle herself.
Yes, I'll wager my medical reputation on that fact.
And that means that only one person who was present on all three occasions was... No, you can't mean...
Your secretary, Miss Bates? Where is she?
In the waiting room.
Splendid. Then Dr. Watson and I will take her back to Baker Street. I have an idea that she can be of invaluable help to us.
A little more tea, Miss Bates?
No, thank you, Dr. Watson.
Then please go on with your story.
As I was saying, Mr. Holmes, I've known John, Mr. Harden, all my life. My father was the Harden coachman. And as I grew up, I thought John Vincent Harden was the most wonderful man in the world.
Well, I imagine that he was quite different then, my dear.
Very different. He was young and romantic, and he loved music. He took violin lessons, and it turned out that he was a prodigy.
I understand that he made his professional debut at the age of 13.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. I was only a little girl then. But he used to tell me that... He wasn't John Vincent Harden, the heir to the tobacco millions. He was Giovanni Vincenti, the great violinist.
Giovanni Vincenti? Odd. Pray continue, Miss Bates.
For 5 years, it seemed that he would be a great musician. Then, on his 18th birthday, his father gave him a lecture on his family obligations, told him that it was his duty to go into the business. John broke his violin across his knee, Mr. Holmes, and... He's never played since.
Miss Bates, I don't need to be a detective to deduce that you love him.
Of course I do. Or at least, I love Giovanni Vincenti. And maybe he's still there. Somehow. Somewhere.
Of course. I've been an idiot. A numbskull.
What do you mean, Holmes?
The case is solved. Come, Miss Bates. We must return to Mr. Harden as fast as we can. I only hope we're not too late.
But why doesn't he answer? The servant said he locked himself in the study again.
Yeah, the door's locked.
I don't like the look of this. Oh. Come on, Watson. We'll break it in. Once more.
Oh, look! He's lying crumpled over his desk.
There's a revolver beside him, Holmes.
Miss Bates, please leave us. My friend's a doctor. He'll take care of him. He's only wounded.
Yes, it's just grazed his scalp.
Oh, thank heavens. I'll be waiting outside.
Obviously, this was attempted suicide. They finally succeeded in driving him mad.
Did they? Read this note lying here. It's in the same handwriting as the other messages.
I might try to fool another detective, but not you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. I admit I shot John Vincent Harden. I'm sure you'll have no difficulty discovering how I escaped from a locked room. Good Lord.
You'll observe that the note was written and blotted on this desk. Watson, I'll see to getting Mr. Harden to bed and summoning his own doctor. I want you to return to Baker Street.
To Baker Street? Why?
Though the case is solved, I have some heavy thinking to do, and I must do it here. So be a good fellow and go back to our lodgings and get me 2 ounces of shag tobacco and my violin. How are you feeling now, Mr. Harden?
Weak, Holmes. But I'm all right.
You still can't remember anything, sir?
No, I felt half out of my mind since that attack was made on Alicia. They told me she'd be all right. I do faintly remember coming home from the hospital and locking myself in the study. The rest is a blank. What did happen, Mr. Holmes?
I'll give you the complete answer very shortly, Mr. Harden. Come on, Watson.
Very well. Try and rest, Mr. Harden. You've been through quite an ordeal.
I'll try, Doctor. I'll try.
Holmes, you left your violin in Harden's room. Did you mean to?
I meant to. And in the meanwhile, we must talk more seriously to Miss Bates.
Well, she's down here in the sitting room.
Yes. And Brother Stevens with her.
First, know the good news, Margaret.
And may we inquire what the good news is, sir?
Oh, didn't see you fellas coming down the stairs. Well, there's no reason why you shouldn't hear it, too. I've just come from the hospital. Alicia's broken off her engagement to John. She's going to marry me.
Indeed. My congratulations.
Yes, sir, but I suggest you don't tell your brother the news. He's a very sick man.
Oh, I won't. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to celebrate.
From the sparkle in your eye, Miss Bates, I can see that you're just as excited as Stevens is.
Of course I am. But tell me, Mr. Holmes, have you found out who attacked John?
Yes, Miss Bates. At last I know the name of Mr. John Vincent Harden's enemy. On the incident of the mutilated fish, you or Stephen or Alicia might have been guilty. On the stolen document, you or Alicia. And on the attack on that lady, you or Stephen. Which seemed to leave only you.
But I was having tea with both of you in Baker Street when John was shot.
Precisely. As perfect an alibi as I've ever known.
Then no one person was responsible. There must have been accomplices.
No, Watson.
Oh, sir.
Remember another fact. The note, supposedly written after the attempted murder, was blotted at the very desk which the wounded man was slumped over. Isn't it clear?
Frankly, no.
The persecutor and the would-be murderer of John Vincent Harden is Giovanni Vincenti.
But they're one and the same man. Miss Bates told us so.
They were the same man. But Harden forced the dominant part of his character into annihilation. When he destroyed his violin, he thought he had destroyed Giovanni Vincenti.
But his alter ego was still dormant.
Yes. And after the shock of the riding accident in Rotten Row, Giovanni Vincenti emerged, hunting for revenge.
You mean that poor John really has a dual personality, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, my dear. No one person seemed to have the opportunity of committing all the attacks. But we left one person off our list. John Vincent Harden himself.
But why, Holmes? For heaven's sake, why?
Giovanni Vincenti struck at the fish, the document, and at the fiancée. All symbols of what Harden had gained for himself. Finally, he attacked Harden's life.
Goodness, dear Holmes. What will happen now? He's out of his mind. They won't send him to an asylum, will they?
I think not, Miss Bates. There's a possibility that this second shock, this self-inflicted wound on the skull, may cure him. Don't you agree, Watson?
Yes, I do. It's certainly possible there'll be a complete reintegration of personality.
Listen.
It's John, and he hasn't touched a violin for ages.
So that's why you left your violin in his room, Holmes?
Exactly. Now, Giovanni Vincenti and John Vincent Harden are again one man, one whole and sound man. I trust he may create a new life for himself. And I'm convinced that he has here the woman who will help him.
Ladies, you certainly must notice how men are attracted by bright, shimmering highlights in a woman's hair. Then why not follow this beauty tip from the famous Million Dollar Powers models, girls noted for their glossy, bright hair?
Powers models wash their hair with Cremel shampoo. This amazingly beautifying Cremel shampoo has been especially developed so that it actually glamour bathes each tiny strand of hair and uncovers all its natural radiant luster.
Yes, and Cremel shampoo never dries the hair. In fact, it has a beneficial oil base which helps keep the hair from becoming dry or brittle.
Its luxurious active foam thoroughly cleanses the hair and scalp and removes all loose dandruff as well as the dirt.
So, ladies, buy a...